A very warm welcome to this World Game Changers podcast, where your host, Paul D. Lowe, embraces many crucial conversations that compassionately contribute towards creating a better life and world. Paul's intention is very simple, to help get people's inspirational insights and motivational messages out into the world so others may benefit.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to this World Game Changers podcast episode. Got a new guest today, based in Spain, not too far actually from where I am. A beautiful, beautiful part of the world. I think Spain's a beautiful country, but this particular place where this lady lives is actually my favourite city in the whole world, and it's Barcelona. And so, without further ado, the lady in question, Raksha Dariani. Raksha, a very, very warm welcome to you.
Thank you, Paul, and it's an honor to be here today. Thank you for selecting me to be the guest.
And I did get the pronunciation of the surname right, did I? Or
almost, but that's almost fine. It's a very long, very traditional surname from where I come from, so it's hard for most people. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what we thought we'd start off talking about, listeners, mm-hmm. Raksha and I, is how storytelling helps us overcome fear. Mm-hmm. Including AI. Now, mm-hmm. AI is something that's very, very prominent in our world for all of us at the moment, whether we're aware of it or not. It certainly mm-hmm. is. And mm-hmm. in some respects, and this is, you know, early plug for a book, soon there's a book coming out called EI and AI Through the Eyes of the Recycled Teenager. So I'm really intrigued to speak, to dance with Raksha, to hear her views on being a creative storyteller and how she sees the world, and you know how storytelling can help us overcome fear and you know this modern day phenomenon of AI. So a bit of a lot to get our heads around there to start with, Raksha. Where do you want to start with all of that?
I can start with a little bit about how I started to write and why I started to write. I think that will give the listeners some context. I grew up in South America. I'm of Indian heritage. I grew up in a small former Dutch colony called Suriname. And I spent 27 years there. And when I turned 28, I decided to go for a master's degree in England. And it was a master's degree in human resources, something that I had studied at bachelor's level as well. And even though I had discovered that it wasn't really my field, because there were so many things that I couldn't control in HR, I mean, you're kind of sandwiched between the employer and the employees. And I kind of felt that was very hard, because when you are a colleague as well, and when you are also hearing stories about what happens with people, what people actually struggle with on a daily basis, it was very hard for me to just be so rigid and say, okay, we have redundancies, off we go with 10 people, or there's a small mistake made by someone and we can't tolerate it. We can't give a second chance because, you know, results matter over anything. So I discovered that this was not a field for me to be in, but I still went for that master's degree thinking, okay, when you choose a field, you dedicate your life to it. You try to work on what's not working. So I thought, okay, if I branch out into consulting, maybe I can, have a little bit more flexibility of who I work with, what type of company I can choose. And so I chose a master's in HR and consulting. And it was during that degree that my professors pointed out that they felt that I had a talent for writing. And I thought, well, maybe I should explore that. So I started experimenting a little bit. I went from admissions essays to CVs to recommendation letters to basic communication that anyone would need help with. I started offering that. And slowly, when the pandemic struck, I started writing on LinkedIn, sharing those stories of HR, of the discrimination, of the bias, of the moments that I couldn't feel adept at what I was doing, and then also personal stories of how I had overcome challenges as a professional, as a human being, as a person of color, so many variants to it. And it was that was, I think, the most beautiful beginning for me when I saw that there was traction for the personal stories, the stories where I had learned something and I could share that with another person who, A, had a shared experience and B, learned something from it because they got the validation that they needed.
That's a key word, isn't it? Validation. Because I think it's fair to say, isn't it, that when we're kind of pilloried, it can edge away, and it does edge away at our confidence, and makes us actually think, yeah, but all these people are saying this around this particular label, around whatever that may be. And I don't, personally, actually, I don't even give airtime to those labels. I really won't. I just don't acknowledge them, whatever they are, because I've seen the damage, that they cause from a very early age. I've seen how massively destructive labels. I understand why society has labels, but I also understand the bigger part of how people conveniently absolve themselves of any responsibility to get to know a person and to get to be respectful and sensitive towards an individual, whatever, whatever that looks like. Rather, they choose the easier option, and I speak as one that in a former life I've done this as well. So I'm not kind of sort of adopting a holier than thou attitude here and a judgmental one, but the point I'm trying to raise is how debilitating labels can be, rather than an individual saying, do you know what, why am I thinking and feeling this way about a person because of X label or Y label or Z label? I need to have a look at myself in this. That's a trigger for me to look in the mirror and saying, well, no, it's wrong, But I think, I ask a question, Raksha. Does that come with a certain level of awareness or emotional intelligence where we reach that point, or is that just good old-fashioned common sense?
Ah, oh, wow, that's going to be a deep one. I'll try to not make it too long-winded, but it's funny how you spoke about labels and like I said, I when I grew up, I was a third culture kid in my, I've been a whole third culture kid my whole life, and it's been a very rewarding experience because I speak different languages, I've met different cultures, I've lived in a diverse society. And I love that. I really love having different people around me, and I love learning about them. I love learning about their culture, their habits, their stories, the way they look at things. And but I also realized that I was given a very tolerant upbringing, and that wasn't necessarily the case in the community I was growing up in. And recently, a researcher shared a video about how this community was categorized in terms of, like, not categorized, I would say, but like behaviors to be aware of in case you wanted to do business there. So like a sort of like a cultural map for you to know if I want to do business there, what should I be aware of? And someone shared this map with me, and I thought, I finally feel validated because I have felt this my whole life, these labels, the othering that come with the society, the us versus them, the inferiority complex, because she spoke about that. And then when I told this person who sent it to me, I said, wow, I know I've felt this my whole life, and I know I've shared it with some people only, but it's very validating to see this somewhere that someone has done research, and I'm not, let me say, I'm not imagining things that happened. And then she said, yes, I know, but they can't help it. And I said, well, we all have something we can't help. What happened to us is not an excuse to not work on our traumas, because I think most behavior stems from unresolved traumas, unhealed moments in our lives, which we then project on other people. But the more we are aware, the more we grow, the more we understand why something happened, if even if it was unfair, because a lot of things that happen to us are unfair, and I fully understand that. I've had my share too. But then, is that really an excuse to ill-treat others? Is that really an excuse to label others? Is that really an excuse to say, you're not one of us? You know? So that, I think, becomes, it's a delicate balance between emotional intelligence, cultural intelligence, and also basic common sense. Because if I do to you what happened to me, how am I any different?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what this speaks to for me as well is kind of the six human needs. Just park that thought for a moment about the six human needs. I just want to very, very lightly, and I'm mindful of us going down a real deep rabbit hole here if we're not careful. So very lightly flirt with something that you said there around trauma. And I'm just interested in your views around, and this maybe is going a bit deep, but I'm going to ask the question anyway, or put the scenario around, you know, there's an alternative kind of train of thought, isn't there, that when we come into this world, sooner or later, we come in to end generational trauma. So those of our ancestors. It's a bit of a deep one. Any kind of almost superficial thoughts around that, Raksham? Because I know that's a massive question and we could dedicate hours and hours on this podcast alone just to kind of, you know, trying to address that. Any thoughts?
Yes. So it's funny you say that. I actually watched a small video, and it was later made into a podcast, of this famous Turkish author named Elif Shafak. And she writes really lovely books, and she touches upon Turkish history, of course, the culture. And it's very similar to the culture that I was brought up with from at home. Indian culture and Turkish culture are quite similar. And what she mentioned was very valid, because she said that there's a part where she mentioned traumas, and she said the first generation that migrates doesn't have A, the resources usually, and B, the awareness to work on the unresolved traumas, because they're too busy making a living. They're too busy surviving. So the second generation is the one that usually has a bit more time, a bit more awareness, and also the safety net to come out of survival mode and then think about their personal development, fulfillment, and the likes. Which makes sense if you look at Maslow's theory of needs. Until we don't have the basic survival, we cannot come to the, we cannot ascend. So it makes perfect sense. And it also made perfect sense to me, because if I look at my personal situation, if there, my grandparents went through war. They were affected by the partition between India and Pakistan. And if I see that, how it affected the whole family, and then how it affected my dad's side of the family, the generation, and then my mom's side of the family, they were affected too, but they migrated a little bit before, so they were not as affected. But when my paternal side has gone through the war themselves, has left on bloody trains, you know? So that trauma has not been resolved. And then when my dad moved to Suriname in his 20s, there was no time to think of how to work on this. There was no awareness. It was not a priority. But I find myself spending a lot of time on these topics and working through it and changing how I see the world, because the bias also sometimes passes down, right? It's like, oh, some people are like this, some people are like that. And I always came up with the argument as a child, because I didn't want to just believe it. Something always told me, believe in humanity, and not in a certain person or a certain race or a certain religion. Believe in humanity, the general feeling that we are all good on the inside. And that's what's going to get you further. And it didn't always get received very well because, of course, like you said, traumas. But yeah, I think we have that choice to make, and we can work on it if we want. And there's a lot of tools out there nowadays.
Yeah, and I think and feel that we're in a phase of humanity's development where awareness, for me, and I generalize this, is escalating at an exponential rate. People are, I don't know, I hasten to use the word becoming awake, because it's too cliched, and I find it too, you know, but there's a definite shift in energy throughout humanity, definitely. For the better, I might add. And that's based on countless conversations I have weekly with people from around the world of, you know, no matter what the scenario is, the socioeconomic background, all the other labels that, you know, this diverse range of people, you know, things, you know, I really, really, truly believe that there's a new paradigm emerging, and it's for the better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's get back to storytelling then. Can mm-hmm. you share with us an example where you've used storytelling in your own kind of challenges? You know, because it is at the end of the day, is it not? I ask it as a question and not make it as a statement.
Mm-hmm.
But whether we tell our something, whether we are, you know, a superhero
mm-hmm.
or we're a victim,
mm-hmm.
either one's just a story, isn't it? I mean, how's that served you, Raksha?
You mean the story we tell ourselves, correct?
Yeah, you know, a story you've told yourself. I mean, has there ever been a phase of your life where you've told yourself almost a victim-related story? Why is it always me? Why is this always happening to me? Because I've certainly spent many years in that space in a former life, as opposed to, do you know, I actually feel like Superman.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think a lot of us, I think before you have the moment where you awaken, where you have a change, where you have a change of mind, whatever you want to call it, there is a phase that you feel distraught and unable to help yourself, much like a victim. Yes, I've been there, and it really shaped how I saw things. I felt helpless. I felt like the world was a really bad place, or it was like I had good intentions, but they were never being met. So it was like a me versus the world type of thought process, and never seeing myself as a catalyst for change, or never seeing myself as, okay, how did I attract this thing to myself in some way or the other? Because the worst things can happen to us also because we are not aware of the boundaries that we have, the boundaries we can set, the way we can speak up, the way we can make choices that empower us instead of disempower us. So we keep replaying that little loop in our mind. So yes, I've been there, and that story makes a big difference. Until a certain period in my life, I think this was in my early 20s, when the realization hit that, okay, I don't have to be a victim of my circumstances, and I don't have to suffer. I don't have to tell myself that I'm losing out, or I've not done well, or everything happened to me and not for me. So yeah, that changing that narrative really helped inside the mind, and it has helped me go from, oh my gosh, I can't do anything about this, to, okay, I can do this. And if it doesn't go well, then I tried, at least. But at least I don't have this feeling of I'm going to fail no matter what. And I think that story makes a big difference. Like you said, either you are Superman or you are the victim, but you choose that narrative in your mind. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. So switching focus then from this kind of internal perspective of what we can do as individuals to change our internal narrative, and looking at, on the surface of it, and I reserve judgment on this, but on the surface of it, a more external phenomenon that we've already mentioned, or that's already been mentioned, called artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here and say it's been imposed upon us. Now we've got to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, and as I'm sure you do, you know, people, there are a lot of people, not all, but a lot of people that are actually trapped in fear by this thing called AI. What does it mean? It's going to, you know, the most common one is it's going to take all our jobs, and, you know, this, that, and the other, and we're going to lose the house, and, you know, we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to move, and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
So switching from that internal narrative of storytelling, the stories we tell ourselves, to this more external, wow, we've got a challenge on here.
Mm-hmm.
Is it true to say that, yet again, our switching back to our internal dialogue, that can help us massively navigate and embrace this enigmatic thing called artificial intelligence?
Yes, I think you may be onto something. I think it's important to realize that it's, after all, a machine. It's man-made. And if it's man-made, whatever we have made, we can also destroy. And in that, I think, lies the greatest wisdom. No, we have that tool at our fingertips, but it's also the wisdom that comes with that tool to say, what can I do with it and what can I not do with it? What should I not be doing? What is ethical and what is not ethical? And there's many authors, for example, now that AI is being widespreadly and being used more widespread, I think, and it's a very good thing that authors, for example, are saying, I don't want AI to tap into my intellectual property and just export whatever I said so it can make it available to anyone, for example, who hasn't bought my book, or singers saying, you can't use my voice without my permission. So I think that's a positive example of us saying, this is where I stop being the victim, and this is where I start being in charge of the story. And yes, AI is good. I can write a really cool social media post with it, or I can tweak my headlines, or I can think of a better, call to action. Fantastic. But I don't want it to plagiarize my data. I don't want to plagiarize other people's data. And then I'm still contributing by using it, but I'm contributing by not manipulating it or being manipulated. And I think that again shows how empowered you are. What do you feel about it?
Yeah, it's interesting. So, as has already been alluded to, the new book, AI and AI Through the Eyes of the Recycled Teenager, basically encompasses eight global co-authors, people that are, if not experts, then certainly very high up in terms of what they're talking about, whether that's finance, whether it's health, whether it's personal development, environmentalism, personal sustainability, etc., etc. The list goes on. And from my own point of view, I mean, I ask at the end, I conclude. So I set the book off, I set the scene. All these amazing co-authors are the kind of filling in the sandwich with their respective chapters. And then I bookend it by concluding. Concluding with my own thoughts, because there's also one of our amazing authors, Amy Moscow. She comes in right at the end to reinforce the point of whether you want to talk about EI, whether you want to talk about AI. By the way, guys, we are together as one. All beings are together as one. So, but park that fourth chapter of Amy's, if we may. So I asked in my in the penultimate in the third chapter or the third part, I asked ChatGPT some questions, which were very emotionally based. They were based, they were real, and I was vulnerable, and they were based on my teenage years, which included alcoholism, violence, etc., etc. And it was more or less said, well, what do I do here then? And to its credit, it more or less said, I can't remember verbatim, but it more or less said, and I'm paraphrasing here, in fact, I'm distorting it, but it more or less said, it's not my field. I don't really know how to do that. Can't connect to that emotional depth of what you're talking about. And I appreciated that. So ChatGPT particularly went up multifold in my estimation of. Because if it had given me some flippant, well, if you'd have done this as a child and you'd have done that as a child, and like you referred to with your parents, particularly your father, he was too busy surviving for any of that kind of, oh, yeah, that'd be great if we got that time and that resource to do that. But I hadn't. I was on the streets and I was surviving. So I really, inverted commas, respected its response.
Yeah, that sounds like a fitted response. I think it's good that it has that let's just say that programming, that it's been taught that, because yeah, it could give us a way to cope, or it could give us some type of advice that actually only a licensed therapist or a specialist could give us. So you don't want that happening, and I think that's really important. And like I said, again, these limitations in place also ensure that we're not going to ethically misuse it. And we need to trust that part. Also, like how you said, if it's not able to help you on that, it already shows you that how is it going to take every job? How is it going to replace us? I don't see it, because again, like how you said, your stories are the ones that shaped you. And you only you have access to that story, and that story is shaping how you see the world, is shaping how you write, how you work with other people. And AI doesn't have that story. It just has tons of information, which it is giving you because that information is open access. But our mind isn't open access, and I think that's an asset.
Absolutely. So last few words to yourself then, Raksha. And thank you so much. It's been fascinating, truly. But I want you to have the last few words to sum up. You know, we've spoke about, well, we've flirted briefly with AI, we've flirted very briefly with AI, we've this, had this kind of platform or this foundation to build on our conversation around the power of storytelling. Bring it all together for us, if you will, and tell us through your eyes, and more importantly, through your heart, what that all looks like. You know, so let me, if I may, let me say to you, Raksha, write a chapter in this book that's already going to be published, but let's turn the clock back, say, 2 or 3 months where you would have had the time. And I want you to invite you to write a chapter in this amazing book called EI and AI Through the Eyes of a Recycled Teenager, taking you back to when you was a teenager. Where would your creative pen take you?
Ooh, I would need a month to think about this. But we're on real time now, so I'm going to give it my best shot. If I had to pen that one chapter in there, I would pen a chapter about learning EI at the earliest, because I think it's a skill that we're not taught early and on enough. And then work on, and that would enable me to work on everything that wouldn't put me in that position of having to recycle myself years later, maybe, because I think the more emotionally intelligent we are, the less we have to deal with these things, or the more capable we become. Maybe the situation would have been the same. No, I don't doubt that. But I would have been more apt to deal with it and more resilient. And I think that's what's important. And then once I would have AI by my side, if I were to have those tools, I would shape the narrative from the beginning. I wouldn't have to go through the trauma victim mode from then. I would be the empowered person that I feel like I am growing into from the past years, from that very time, and share that story much sooner than waiting many years later and having to deal with it on my own.
Okay. Let me just sort of comment on that, if I may. So in terms of not having to recycle, but what if part of that recycling, in the bigger part of that, was actually embracing that childlike curiosity that we tend to lose as adults? So I'm not necessarily talking coming at it, certainly from my own perspective as the recycled teenager. I'm not talking about it necessarily about lessons learned, painful lessons learned. Yes, that's a part of it. But I'm more actually embracing that childlike curiosity and combining it with seniors' wisdom. Because is it true, and I ask it as a question, Raksha, rather than yet again offer it as a statement, is it true that as we get older, we kind of do lose that, is edge the right word, in terms of that childlike curiosity? You know, we're kind of, just grow up and at your age, and you're a responsible person now, you know, you've got family, you can't be acting like a child, and, you know, and this, that, and the other. So for me, it's, and I love this phrase, it's about still having that yearning to kiss the sun and touch the moon that a child has. And I think as adults, and I'm offering a massive generalization, we kind of lose that a bit. So I just kind of throw that back in the mix to say, any thoughts about that?
Yes, I agree with you on that 100%. But I also feel that maybe we don't lose it, but we leave it in a little corner of the house. House being our heart, our mind, our way of being, because we know it's going to be frowned upon. And I was reflecting on this the other day itself. You see children play, scream, run around. It's tolerated up to a certain age. And after a certain age, it's like, grow up, you're not a 2-year-old anymore. Grow up, you're not 5 anymore. The label starts to come in there. So the psyche learns that, okay, this is unacceptable behavior. But out goes that I'll try anything with the I also want to try anything, the curious part. And that's the sad part. And that's also why I said, if we had the wisdom of the ages with us, then maybe we wouldn't have to go through that trauma cycle. So we don't have to lose that beauty as well in the process, because that's what hurts the most. You were so carefree, so light, so, because your teen years are beautiful, aren't they? You can have everything. You can, if you have safety, like I'm saying, emotional safety or domestic safety, in an ideal situation, you are supposed to be able to have everything, but you don't. And then all those coping mechanisms rob you of that. So if we didn't have that, we could all live a bit more fulfilling and have not lost that part. I think that's where I was getting at.
So there you have it, listeners. A fascinating dance, though I say it myself, one that I've certainly thoroughly enjoyed. And my earpiece keeps dropping out. Just the beauties of being in the moment. A fascinating dance. Any final thoughts, Rakshi, before we literally do close it out?
No, absolutely not. I think this has been wonderful. It's been a great opportunity to exchange thoughts with you, to learn from your experiences, from your past, from how you've overcome your challenges. And the beautiful part is that you've written a book about it. And like, I like that part where you're able to share that experience with others. And like we spoke before, that people can learn from our mistakes, from our stories, and take something away with them so that they don't have to fall and get hurt, and they can live a fulfilling life like we were all meant to be. So that's all I would like to add.
Thank you so much. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You. Thank you.
So listeners, you make up your own mind. This whole kind of mixed bag of, you know, storytelling, you know, recycled teenagers, AI, EI, it's all been chucked in the mixing bowl. You bake your own metaphoric cake with it and see what it comes out like. And on that metaphoric culinary note, I'm going to sign off the way I always do by saying, remember, the world's changing. How will you respond?
Thanks very much for listening to this World Game Changers podcast episode. Hopefully you found it interesting and helpful. Drop a line to paul@worldgamechangers.org with any thoughts or questions you may have, and he'll be more than happy to respond. Remember, the world's changing. How will you respond?